Before I start teaching a little bit, I wonder whether we have some wireless microphones here. Do we have that? One? How many do we have? Two. Cool. Because what I will try to do tonight, it won't take that long time. It probably not be an hour. But I have an introduction to tell, and then I have a little bit of theory to explain, which many of you already know, so it will be a little bit of repetition. But then I want to apply it to your life. And it will be a little bit of skill sharing, actually, or examples which I wish, if possible, to get from you as I go through this, like a setup I have. And to make that to everybody be able to hear this, we need to speak into a microphone. It's not going to be some kind of discussions here, but as I go through what I want to talk about, step by step, I'm just wondering if somebody can add in some of their own examples, because there are a lot of skills in people who are practicing, and people find their own skillful means to various things, which can be smart, but you don't tell anybody. And as I talk now, I will kind of open up. If somebody has something from their own life, something they do practically, then I invite you to add that to what I say. I will say a few things about everything, but if somebody else can connect to what I'm saying and come with their own examples in addition to mine, that will be really beautiful. But that's the last part. First, I have some introduction, then some theory, and then we can apply that to your life. And then see whether there are other people here who can add more to what I say. And also for me, I found my way. And there are a lot of experience here in this room over the years. So that's an invitation coming a little bit in 20 minutes or so. The reason why I want to do this is that when I'm starting to teach, there are a lot of people saying that I don't have time to practice. It's so difficult to find time to meditate, to find a quiet place, and then you can sit down or you can lie down and you can calm down and you can kind of recharge your mind a little bit and lift up your mind if you have learned to meditate properly. And there's so many people saying that it's so difficult. And it's so difficult to apply all these teachings we have here in daily life. And that is true. But the point is that when we talk about practice, most people, including myself in the past, before I became a bhikkhu or a monk, was in my practice that was keep a little bit of virtue, and then it was meditation. But meditation, that is just one of those eight factors in Eightfold Path. There are seven other factors, and they can be practiced without being in a silent place, in a forest or in a retreat center. All of those factors can be practiced and developed when you're working, when you're making food for your children, when you're sitting in your car. Those seven factors, and that's what I wanted to title this talk, the Sevenfold Path. Because the Sevenfold Path can be practiced everywhere, at any time. And you don't need silence. It's good if you can have a silent place. But those seven factors can be part of your life 24/7 and can be applied, and you can adjust your life, whatever you do, according to the Eightfold Path. And it's not that it's just meditation which has a positive effect on your mind. The Eightfold Path is there to slowly purify your mind from mental suffering and afflictions, and pains and problems internally. And we are so, at least I was in the past, so conditioned that it's the meditation part, it's the stillness. That's the part where you really see the effect of the practice. But that stillness, that meditation, builds on the seven other factors. And also those seven other factors, they also do something with your mind. You add like drops of peace and calm and harmony by practicing all those factors through the day, through the week, at work, in the bus. All of that is just a question of being aware and understanding, having the Eightfold Path clearly in your mind. So if you don't have the Eightfold, if you don't understand, if you don't have the Eightfold Path clearly in your mind, then what you can do is to learn that. It's not that difficult, and I'm going to go through that now very quickly. I'm going to go through the seven first factors in a practical way. And if these seven factors can be just, if you can know them thoroughly inside of you, then you have like a model you can apply at any time, anywhere, and it actually does affect your life. It does clear up your life. It does make your life easier. It's maybe not as easy to see as if you get proper meditation going, because then you really can calm down your mind and you see and you experience your mind that your mind is better. There's an improvement of quality of your mind. But all the other factors also works. But you might not just see it, you don't feel it. Every time you adjust your life according to those seven factors or those eight factors. But they do work, all of them. And if they were not necessarily, I don't think the Buddha would have taught that as a necessity for your development. So that is what I will wish to focus on tonight. And that's these seven factors. And I've done a little bit of preparations. So what I present to you quickly is these seven factors and what they are. And I know many of you know this quite well already. So just take this as a repetition. And then we will apply this afterwards to quite a few interesting areas of life. So we all have heard those names, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right effort, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and in the end, right concentration or right stillness or right samadhi. And if you look up in the old ancient texts, which we say is coming from the Buddha, then basically the first factor, which is we call right view, is the Four Noble Truths. And the Four Noble Truths are that there are afflictions, there are suffering, mental suffering inside of you, and you feel that every day. They're there. That's the first truth. The second truth is that there is a reason for that, and that's your craving. And the third truth is that there is a way out of that. There is a cessation of all those mental afflictions we are carrying around. There is a way out of mental problems and internal conflicts. And the fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path, which is the way for your mental afflictions to slowly fade away. And you clear up your mind and you purify your mind, and there's an enhanced quality of life. The better you feel inside, the purer you are inside, the less negative emotions there are, the better quality of life you will have. So that's basically right view. to understand the Four Noble Truths. Have an idea of what it is. And that can be applied. It's not just a theory. The Four Noble Truths can be applied to your daily life. Then we have right intention. That's the second factor. Which, my best translation so far is just renunciation or giving. And kindness. And some kind of gentleness, not harming. That's like a foundation block, some kind of intention which should be a basis in your life. Kindness, giving, and not harming. Being very gentle in life. That's the second factor. And it's so easy to forget that factor. The third and the fourth and the fifth factors are very practical. The third is the right speech. And basically, not lying, be truthful, trustworthy, and no malicious gossiping. It just divides people, and instead of that, create unity and harmony around you. And no harsh speech. Instead of that, try to speak gentle. I think the translation from the Buddha is you're supposed to speak gentle, soothing to the ear, loving, such word as goes to the heart, friendly and agreeable to the many. That's the way we should try to speak. And then also to avoid like just useless chatter. Avoid vain talk and try to speak at the right time, truthfully, and speak on what is useful with good arguments, moderate and full of sense. So that's the third factor, speech. To speak in a wise, wholesome way. The fourth is right action. And what you're not supposed to do is killing living beings. And instead of that, being full of compassion and kindness and caring, welfare for all living beings, whether human or animals, and no stealing. The opposite of stealing is giving, and giving up. And then, of course, no sexual misconduct, and we all know what that is. Unlawful, abusive sexual activity, it's like absolutely no-no. That's the right action, the fourth. The fifth is the right livelihood. And that is actually defined very simple. Not have a job which harms other people. And examples are like trading in weapons, trading in living beings. It can be human or it can be animals. Not trading in meat. And alcohol and drugs, don't have that as some kind of living, livelihood, and not trade in poison. That's right livelihood. The monastics have more details, but for most people, that is what the Buddha defined as right livelihood. Then we have the sixth one, which is right effort. That is a word which is difficult to understand, but it basically means that you have mind states inside of you all the time. And sometimes they're negative and sometimes they're positive. Sometimes you're full of fear and anger, and sometimes you're full of kindness and caring. The point of the sixth factor is that you put in effort to deliberately avoid and remove somehow those emotions and thoughts which are unwholesome, and develop states, deliberately develop and maintain mental states which are positive and wholesome. Like kindness, like giving, compassion, deliberately developing them, and deliberately try to avoid mental states which you feel are negative for you. That's the sixth factor. Being aware of what's going on inside and deliberately see what's going on, and if there is something negative, you work on that so it can fade away, and you work on developing something which is beautiful inside of you. And we all know these. It's just various words like kindness, compassion, forgiveness, all of those beautiful things you're supposed to deliberately develop in your life. And the seventh factor is right mindfulness. Mindfulness is a good word. And it's basically being aware, being mindful about your body and about what's happening, about your feelings and what's going on inside of your mind. And then you can apply some wisdom which is following, which is part of right mindfulness. For example, that many of those thoughts, many of the thoughts and emotions, they are impermanent. They come and they go. And that the body, for example, which we take to be mine or ours, is basically something we're just using temporarily. Kind of belongs to nature, but we still think it's mine and ours. So those are, and then the last factor is basically right stillness or concentration, which we call meditation. But I'm not going to go into that now because that's not the focus of this talk. It's these seven first factors here I want to apply in life. And if there's somebody, when I walk through some examples here, if somebody can add in their own skillful means, and we can share some skills, and people have some examples, then please raise your hand, and then somebody will come with a microphone. It's not for discussions, it's just to share a little bit. If somebody has something to share, and there must be a lot of people here who have experience, and have found their way somewhere, and what you know and what you have learned, if you can tell that, that will help the others. I'm only one person, and Ajahn Brahm is only one person who is teaching here. You also have a lot of skills and experience. And what I did yesterday, I turned on the computer and got internet access, and I basically just Googled, or I searched for statistics. What is it we're doing in life? How many hours do we spend in doing various things? So if we are to apply this sevenfold path, which we can apply at any time, what is it we're doing which we can apply it to? And the statistics show me what we're doing in life. So I will just quickly read it out what I found. First of all, every day we sleep about 9 hours. We sleep and we prepare ourselves for going to the bathroom, etc., having a shower. That's 9 hours of a day. After that, we work 7 hours, which also includes some driving back and forth and some commuting, sitting in a chair, sitting in a bus or a train. And then we spend 4 hours on, we can call hobby or entertainment, TV, maybe gaming, I don't know, maybe not so much gaming here. And then we spend 1.5 hours doing housework, maintaining our house, washing, maintaining, repairing our apartments and house. And then we spend 1.5 hour eating every day. We sit in front of a table and filling up our tummies. 1.5 hour. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, supper, and maybe a hamburger in the car. That's a lot of hours. 1.5 hour every day. And then we spend 1 hour every day helping and caring for our family and maybe kids or brothers and sisters and your friends. Just full on caring, helping others, those you know. And then how much do you think we spend shopping? Can anybody guess? Nobody dares to guess? 2 hours? Okay, Nicholas said 2 hours. Okay, now, statistically, we only spend 30 minutes shopping every day. And statistically, I'm not going to discuss this afterwards, but just for fun, we spend statistically 20 minutes on religious activity every day, and we spend 10 minutes on education. That means after we've grown up, after we've done our schooling and universities, etc., when we're done with that, we only spend 10 minutes every day to get wiser and learn more. So the big thing is sleep, 9 hours, work, 7 hours, entertainment, sport, TV, 4 hours, household, 1.5 hours, eating and drinking, 1.5 hours, caring, helping each other, 1 hour, and then we do 1/2 hour shopping. That's what we statistically are doing. So then the question is, can we practice the sevenfold path while we're sleeping? Is that possible? No. Somebody shaking their heads. There is something you can do. When you're sleeping, you're not aware. But before you go to sleep, there's something you can do. So when you go to bed and you jump into bed and before you fall asleep, there are things you can do. And what you can do is to practice right intention, which is kindness. And the Buddha was highly recommending doing kindness meditation when you go to bed. Metta, kindness, loving kindness. That changes your mind and put your mind into a positive mind state, which you take into sleep, and then it's maintained in sleep. So you get a better sleep through the night. So if you lift up your mind in bed before you fall asleep, whatever you do will carry through your sleep. And I don't have all this list, but I think the Buddha was listing like there's 10 or 11 positive effects of doing kindness meditation before you fall asleep. You don't have bad dreams, and you wake up refreshed, and I don't remember. I don't have a print out of it. But another thing you can do in terms of sleeping and preparation for sleep is that you end up going to the bathroom. And that's a place where you can be honest in regards to your own body. When you're taking a shower, this is a place where you are by yourself and you can be really honest about your own body. That's a place where you can try to be friends with your body and try to analyze your body accordance with the Buddha, thinking, well, this isn't my body. You're using it. It's a vehicle you have now. And you can analyzing it as if you have problems, if you have physical problems, that there is suffering. The body creates suffering for you, which is the first noble truth. So for those 9 hours we spend every day, we're sleeping, there isn't much you can do. But you can do something in front of sleeping. You can connect with your body. Get some truth about your body. Accept your body. And you can do some kindness meditation, which changes and uplifts your mind a little bit, which takes you into a nice sleep. Does anybody have any comments to that about sleeping? Does anybody have any deliberate effort in terms of sleeping and development spiritually? I don't expect anybody, but still, I just want to ask. This is a difficult one. It's not much you do while you're sleeping. So no comments. Okay, there's one down there.
Thanks, Ajahn Nito. In regards to sleeping, I've always thought that my mind was beyond my control, notwithstanding my spirituality and my connection with my spirituality, but that there is an activity going on that's separate. That is my comment. But I'm really pleased about what you mentioned around kindness meditation.
Yeah, yeah.
As an approach to going to sleep to try and maybe connect them.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Next is work. And that's all. There's a lot of activity in work. And we spend an average 7 hours. So what I want to say about work is that this is a place where you do a lot of things and you can apply a lot of the Eightfold Path, or at least the Sevenfold Path, while you're working. First of all, when you are working, it is actually giving. Yeah, you get a paycheck, but a lot of people will not have done that work if they didn't need to. So there's a lot of right intention of giving in actually just working. Just the work in itself is giving, which does something for your mind. If you compare that to just being at home, lying in your sofa and doing nothing, then you don't give anything. If you actually work, you're giving, you're helping, you're sharing. And that in itself is right intention. And it does something with you. You have helped. You have done something. And also at work, you meet a lot of people, and that's where there are a lot of conflicts arising, disagreements, and that's a very good place for you to be aware of what's going on inside of you. If you can, at work, be aware of what's going on inside, all your thoughts, your emotions. And if something happens at work which makes you angry or depressed or you think is wrong, that is a beautiful opportunity for you to apply the sixth factor. If you can't control it, then the only thing you can do is just to help your own mind. Something happened, you don't like it. See where you can fix up your mind. It's brilliant training to work on your mind when you can't control the world. You can't control, you can lean your mind, you can purify your mind, but things around you, very often you can't change. And a lot of these things happen at work. A lot of decisions making happen. And also very often connected with work, you're driving. Either driving part of work or to work and back home after work. And that is also a place where you can apply a lot of right intention of kindness and non-harming. You drive a car, don't speed. It's not a nice feeling if you drive too fast, and because you drive too fast, you end up harming somebody. A little kid jumps in front of your car and you damage or even kill a human being. That is not the right intention. The right intention is to be kind and don't harm. So when you're driving, drive kindly. Don't speed. And don't drink drive. Same thing. That is basically the fifth factor of livelihood, which doesn't include alcohol or drugs. It reduces your ability to drive, and you end up harming people. And also, if you're driving, please drive. When I was young, when I got the driving license, I managed to do a lot of things while I was driving. I was driving a car. I was listening to radio at the same time. I was speaking a mobile phone in one hand, and I ate a hamburger in my other hand, and I steered the car with my knees. Don't do that. When you're driving, do that 100%. So you can drive kindly. You don't harm anybody. If you commute, if you're sitting in a bus or in a train, a lot of things you can do. I think now, the few times I sit in a train, more and more people now sit with the mobile phones and the tablets. And it's actually a beautiful opportunity to develop like theory and right view, listening to teachings, podcasts, when you sit on the train. That's a beautiful opportunity you can use. You can't do anything. You just sit there. You have to sit there for half an hour or an hour or 50 minutes. You can use that for something beautiful. Get some more skills and knowledge in. And also another thing which is a nice thing to do when you're sitting on a train or a bus is that there isn't much you can do when you're sitting still, even in an air flight. But you can look at your mind. You can continuously be aware of your inside, be aware of your emotions. And if there is something negative, try to work on that. See whether you can make them disappear and you can replace it with something more pleasurable for yourself, something more delightful for yourself. Basically using those minutes you sit in a bus to clean up yourself a little bit inside, and you will feel a little bit better because of that, and it's a really good training. Does anybody have any comments to that? There's one down there. So how can we, does anybody have some smart things to do at work so we can apply the Sevenfold Path while we're working?
Regarding work, I'm very fortunate that I teach yoga, tai chi, qigong, belly dancing, all beautiful things. And I, before my tai chi, I bring in loving kindness, and I say to my class, now we send healing loving kindness to the world, to humanity, particularly to all the people in need, all the places in turmoil, all our animal friends, our relatives, anyone that's sick, we send loving kindness and healing and into everyone we know and into ourselves.
Yeah.
Also, travelling on the train, driving the car, I chant. Particularly if someone is in trouble, Yeah. You know, people having difficulties.
Yeah.
If someone cuts me off, I chant for them. I bless them.
Yeah.
And that helps me enormously. Thank you.
Yeah. That's a brilliant idea. When you sit in your car, you can chant. Maybe not on the bus, though. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can. You can do it loud in your own car, and you can do it in silence on the train. Microphone is coming. No, Alanda.
Thank you, Ajahn. I just want to say I know someone who has been very kind at work. With that person's kindness, this person undertook some teaching after this person stopped full-time work. And this person was very kind to the students and then went out of the way to help the students. And there were a lot of, this is at Curtin University, and there were a lot of foreign students who were not good in English, and this person took a lot of interest to improve their English knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. And the kids were very to this person, and there were a lot of results were improved very highly because of the kindness. It's not the technical knowledge of the subject mainly, but the kindness.
Mm.
And this person did not have much teaching experience, but in the school there were a lot of about 100 or so full-time lecturers,
mm-hmm.
probably 50 part-time lecturers.
Yeah.
And this person got the best teacher award in 1.5 years. Okay. $2,000 award.
Wow.
And and a plaque. And this person purely it was the kindness.
Yeah.
And he's a, this person is a Buddhist.
Yeah. Okay.
Practices meditation.
Yeah.
And that person imparted it.
Yeah.
I know that as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I know that person very well.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to share.
Yeah, perfect. Basically, just using work to develop your kindness toward other people as an extremely nice possibility. And maybe I can just mention one thing too. You're also supposed to be kind to yourself. And I know perfectly well that a lot of people are working too much. If you work too much, you're not kind to yourself. It's not, you kind of maybe look at the right intention and see whether you can rest more and just work as much as you need. Maybe you don't need this new car, this new house. Maybe you can live a bit simpler and work less. Okay, so the next one is hobbies and entertainment, maybe sport and TV. And we spend 4 hours in doing that every day, in average. And I guess most of the TV is about watching news and politics and maybe movies. That's probably TV in a nutshell. And what most of the thing I want to say is about the TV part, because I think I got some nice statistics here saying how much we watch TV. How much do you think Australians watch TV every day? How many minutes? How many hours? Start by the United States. It's 270 minutes every day watching this box. That's like four or five hours? 270? I haven't calculated it. That's a lot. The opposite end is actually India and the Scandinavian countries where I'm from. It's down to 150. So it's almost just a half. And Australia, according to the statistics here, spend 188 minutes every day watching TV. That is 188, that is three hours? 3 hours every day watching TV? And what I want to say about TV watching, that's a complicated thing, but I remember myself in the past, watching TV was basically a little bit of an escape. Your life is difficult and you're tired, and what you do is just sit down in front of a TV and just waste some time. It's basically the first noble truth of problems and mental problems. And if you're able to face that, that you're actually probably watching so much TV because you want to run away from something. And it's better to try to work on that and see whether you can improve your insight instead of running away from it and running into TV. It gives you some entertainment, but it's not an escape, mostly. There is some documentary and a lot of good to it, but I think too much, we're just running away. And there's so much more we could have done instead of, which is much better. Better use of our life. So maybe right intention can be just less screen time. Less hours in front of the TV and maybe the internet. And also, remember that when you watch TV, it is a bit like that the TV station, like ABC, they're kind of taking over your mind. And they are kind of putting all kind of things into your mind. All kind of negativity, all kind of terror and problems in the world. And load you up with a lot of negativity. And you just take it in. Well, what you can do is to be active yourself with what goes in and what's happening inside of your mind. And you can deliberately avoid what you feel is an affliction inside, and you can develop something wholesome. But if you sit for hours watching TV, you're just loading up your mind with a lot of negative things. So you're kind of losing the ability to develop yourself. That's how I see TV today. You see this news or some politics going on, and you really disagree what's going on, and you get angry because something is happening out there which you don't like. Maybe it's something you didn't really need to hear. Does anybody have any comments with watching TV? Is watching TV something skillful to do for your own mind and for your own inner happiness? There's one down there.
I think sometimes I like to watch some sport.
Yeah.
I just put it on mute as well, which is a good thing, so you can make your own perspective on what you're watching, and you're not having someone else's voice manipulate what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I think it kind of helps.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, there are good things. It's not that. It's just that it might be an idea to. Oh, there's another one down there.
Hello.
Hi.
I realize that when I am in a good headspace, I easily meditate, so I sleep better and I think better and everything goes well. And
yep.
And then when I'm not in a good headspace, I struggle very much.
Okay.
Like to go in the good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And television would I would look for to watch something on the TV just to distract my mind.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So it is again it is a little bit for the escape. It can also be something positive. You have something inside which you don't like, some kind of afflictions, something going on. But I think the idea is that maybe you can spend more time having an active relation to that and figure why is it like that and how can that be reduced instead of running away from that and running into some kind of entertainment. Yeah. Okay? Then we spend 1.5 hour eating and drinking. No, sorry. We maintain our house and our apartment. We spend 1.5 hours every day. And that, again, it's really nice practice to maintain your house if you have a family and have friends. It's selfless giving. If you're married, you have a partner and you have kids, the work you do to keep your house and your apartment clean and nice and functional is a way of giving. It's kindness. And those kind of activities are positive for your mind. It is something which gives you some inner joy, some kind of giving. And one problem we often run into when we look at our house and we clean our house is that we're not supposed to kill. And there are a lot of small animals. There's ants, cockroaches, maybe there's a mice here and there. Are you able to get them out of your house without killing? Can you be kind in that way? That's the right action. And we spend 1.5 hour eating and drinking in front of a table. And I know there's one issue which is very, there's a lot of tensions and disagreements, but vegetarian food. If you don't eat meat, you're not causing animals to be killed. Is that something? Is that a good idea? And also making food and eating food and giving food is a gift you give. If you make food for your family, it's a lot of giving and a lot of kindness into it. And if you are the receiver of food, you can develop a lot of gratitude that here are food for you. It's given to you. That's an intention you can develop. Any feedback on that? Any comments? There's one there in the front.
Thank you, Ajahn. I just wanted to say that it was really nice of you to remind us to think about the daily chores and things that we do. Yeah. I'm a mother of two small children.
Yeah.
As an act of giving, because I think you can easily get into the habit of just going through the motions, making the lunches and the meals and washing the clothes and not really appreciating that you are giving in that time.
Yes.
So thank you for reminding us to do that.
Yeah. All those things you do to help, whether it's family or friends, it's giving. It does something with your mind. You might not just see it right away. If you keep doing it, something happened compared to not doing it. If you just were lying in your sofa doing nothing, your mind would just be grey, out of energy. If you're giving and caring, it does something. It'll give you a little lift. You'll feel better inside. And the last thing I want to discuss here now, we've already gone 50 minutes here, is caring for family and friends, which we spend 1 hour every day. Kids, brothers, sisters, parents, and friends. And again, that's a really beautiful thing to do. There's a place where you can develop the second factor of intention, right intention. It's just a gigantic source of doing good things, of giving, good karma, which comes back to you. And this is also a place where you can lead by example. So all the things you do, if you are a virtuous person, if you are a generous person, and if when you then are helping other people, they will pick that up and they will learn from that and they will end up doing the same in the long run. So working with other people, helping your kids, your brothers, if you can be kind, if you can give, if you can be gentle, you will condition them to be the same. Any comments on that? One in the back?
Okay, so I consider myself someone who helps a lot, but I would like to understand where is... how can I find the balance to not feel drained? Because sometimes I think I found myself giving lots here, lots there, and forgetting myself.
Mm. Yeah, okay. You have to find a balance. If you have relations which are unbalanced, so you don't get much back, you give a lot and give a lot, but you don't get much back, then maybe you have to adjust those relations with other people. But what I'm focusing here is that when you do things for others, when you have right intentions of kindness, when you have virtuous behavior, it does something for your mind. Of course, if you do it too much, you don't get anything back, you get tired. You work too much. But in the right amount of kindness and giving, what I'm focusing on here, that there is something happening inside of you. There is an effect on this mentally, spiritually, life quality. It does work. All these factors of the right view, right intention, right livelihood, right speech, right actions, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right view, right intention, all of those have an effect. And I just wanted to try tonight, and we're coming to the end now. Oh, sorry, one more.
John, me too, no? I'd like to say something on using the effect, of the Eightfold Path.
Yep.
The Four Noble Truth, Eightfold Path, Buddha was telling us,
yep.
It teaches suffering and the end of suffering, okay?
Yep.
Yet, no doubt, this, from my view, okay?
Yep.
I've been in Buddhism for some time now. Initially, I was going around and around, searching for the thing, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't find any kick, Or maybe a little bit in the Four Noble Truth, in the info path, okay? Solve my problem now, what I found, okay, effective, okay,
yeah.
Is the Satipatthana, the four foundations of mindfulness now.
Yeah.
that really hits me, you know, okay?
Yeah.
Like, I have a problem now. I want to solve it now.
Yeah.
Not, you know, no. The Eightfold Path is there. It gives me asks me to lead a good lifestyle. Yes, it helps me this thing, okay, now.
Yes.
So what I find is I go into my, there's a problem, my feelings, okay?
Yeah.
My thoughts, my feelings, okay? My perceptions, this thing, okay? And I bring in dharmas to this thing, no? And it helps to solve my problem right at the moment.
Yeah, good.
You see, like the lady was saying, hers is chanting, okay? Yeah. Yours is chanting, all right?
Yep.
Yeah, I can believe that there.
Yep.
Mine is right into my feelings, yep. you know, and bringing impermanence, tolerance, all these things, okay?
Yep.
To solve my problem right now.
Yeah, cool, good. So that was what I wanted to do tonight. I just wanted to talk simply about the seven factors which works, which you can apply, and which I encourage you to kind of learn quite well. And these are kind of skillful means you can just pull out of your mind and apply as, and whatever you're doing in life during a day, you can just remind yourself all those factors and see whether you can apply some of those factors and develop yourself that way and using your day-to-day life to practice instead of just going practice only when you sit on a cushion in silence. And if you do all this, if you really try honestly, are really trying to develop all these factors through the day and through the weeks, that will also do something with your meditation. When you do sit down to meditate, you have a better starting position because you made yourself, your mind, like a beautiful mind, a beautiful person. And then it's much, much, much easier to meditate. And it's much, much easier to find peace and harmony and joy inside when you do find time to sit down and be peaceful. Okay? Okay, I think... Okay, that's a couple of short questions, probably.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, there's three questions here, and all of them are really big. So the question is, how do you do kindness meditation? The only thing I can say is that just go on go on YouTube, on BSWA, and there are a lot of teachings there, how to do it in practice. And the last question is actually from Oslo, where I'm from Norway, where I'm from. Using the Noble Path, how do I deal with strong, painful emotions that overburden my during meditation? This is basically a meditation question which is outside the subject of tonight. But quickly, how do I deal with strong, painful emotions that overburden me during meditation? Actually, the answer is easy. It's just what I've been trying to say today. If you are overwhelmed by strong emotions and painful emotions during the day, then pick up the Eightfold Path and apply it to the day. And little by little, drop by drop, all those strong emotions will be not so strong anymore. They'll be lighter and lighter. And they will stop overburdening you. You're getting like a handle on it. And you learn how to handle it. And then when you then do sit down to do the meditation, it's not so overburdening anymore. I think that's the answer to Jan Erik from Oslo. Okay? Then we can finish off.